Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate that you listen to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and also leave us some feedback. Rate us. Give us a review. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
I have in studio the mayor of Rip City, Bill Shonley, who brought his championship ring. I tweeted out a photograph of him. He looked like a championship boxer. He's ready to go. How are you?
I'm fine. You know, for an old tiger here, I'm doing the best I can. I'm very much involved in these playoffs like most everybody else is. And I just heard you say, and I agree, spoke at a spot this morning and basically said the same thing. Game three is the big game of the series. Even if it would be 1-1, game three is the big game of the series, right?
Yeah, and I think if Oklahoma City is going to put up a fight, they win this game.
It's not over yet.
Yeah.
No.
You've seen a lot of series over the years, including that championship series in 77, which 76ers were up 2-0 in that.
Absolutely. And that flew back home and everybody... Their dollar was down for a while, but you had to go and play those games. And lo and behold, they win the next two games, and this series is tied. Went back to Philadelphia and knocked the great Philadelphia 76ers, knocked them for a loop, came back home, and played that Sunday afternoon in the sixth game. And it was Harry Glickman who CBS went after it. And they wanted to play the game at 11 o'clock in the morning.
Oh.
And Harry, God bless us himself, he said, no blankety blank way, CBS, are we going to play that game at 11 a.m. in the morning?
I bet it wasn't a blankety blank.
Probably wasn't.
Hey, Sean's, after the 77 title game, you made a comment on the broadcast. You said, we couldn't have a post-game show if we wanted to because there was a madhouse on the court.
Right.
Did you get thrown in the showers after the game?
Yeah.
Who threw you in the showers?
Well, Walton, Twardzik, and Bob Gross, and I think Lloyd Neal was there too. Oh, excuse me. Maurice Lucas. They grabbed me, and they were all soaking wet at the time anyway. Come on, you're getting... I couldn't have done a post-game show at all.
Did you have your radio equipment with you, or were you
I had a little... Yeah, I had my microphone and those things. I thought I was going to get electrocuted. It's too late. So that was it.
And then, you know, that series in particular, because you mentioned the Blazers win game three, but game two had the fight, or at least, you know, the big thing. I want to play the clip from that. Here's Bill Shonley. Not game two of the 77 finals.
Into Gilliam, put it up, doesn't drop. Dawkins the rebound, along with Bob Gross, and now Daryl Dawkins. Oh, look at Ramsey. Here we go. We got a fight. Now Lucas hits Daryl Dawkins from behind. We got a good one. Dawkins and Lucas. Here we go. There's a right-handed punch by Lucas. Now Dr. J gets a hold of Lucas, and Ramsey is right after Daryl Dawkins. Ramsey has a hold of Dawkins. Now away from that, we have a fight out on the floor. Everybody is standing in front of me. Ramsey is involved in this. Players are involved. Spectators are involved. That was a spectator that got out there. And it all started when Bob Gross and Daryl Dawkins went up for a rebound.
All right, there it is. You can see it like it was yesterday, can't you?
Oh, yeah. And the person that came out on the floor was Daryl Dawkins' mother. Say, what? Was she trying to break it up? And she was a big woman.
Yeah.
So you didn't want to fool with her. So.
Was that the turning point for the Blazers?
Yeah.
That, hey, Maurice Lucas has said, enough.
Enough. Right. And before the game... First game at home.
Yeah.
When we came back, right before they tossed the ball in the air, he went down and shook hands with Daryl Dawkins and the rest of the 76ers and Philadelphia. Said, what is.
They didn't expect that, did they?
No. Well, nobody did. Old Maurice did it on his own.
Psychology.
Blazers won it by two, 109, 107. I think about that game quite often.
Because that was the game. Because if the 76ers win that game, the series is over. You're down 3-0.
Yeah. I mean, the Blazers were underdogs right from the beginning, despite what the record was at that particular time. But they pulled it off. And, you know, you said it the other day. I get it quite often. The people want to see my championship ring. And I show it to them, and I said, oh, that's wonderful. And in the course of the conversation, I'll come up with, I've been doing it for years, not trying to be smart or anything like that. I said, I want to stick around until they get another one, but they better hurry up.
Yeah.
And that's been 40-plus years.
And the laughter's getting a little nervous now. You're 89.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So. I'm coming up to 90, John. I just can't believe that. So I hope I am around when they have a chance to win the NBA or the World's Championship. There's no situation like it if you're into basketball.
Bill Shonley is with us, legendary broadcaster of the Blazers, hired by Harry Glickman in 1970 to be the broadcast voice. By the way, I like how you went right into boxing play-by-play on that call. Like, you're a broadcaster. You're like, here we go, we got a good one, and it's just right into the boxing.
We did have a good one, but everybody finally stood up in front of me, and I could not see everything that was going on, but it was a great moment.
I love it. When you look back at that time, because 77, they win the championship, you get thrown in the showers, the parade after.
Yeah.
77-78 season starts, and they're on fire. Like, it must have felt like it was going to last forever.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That was just a wonderful time for the state of Oregon. They needed something like that. You know, all the demonstrations that were going on at that particular time, wherever you went in the Pacific Northwest, it was almost on fire. And now the people had something else to cheer about, not complain about.
Yeah.
And the Blazers winning that championship just turned things around. Now, that's my opinion. But this state, at that particular moment in time, needed something like that.
It brought everybody together. People were hanging off lampposts, watching the parade.
Absolutely.
What was that parade like? Were you in a car, or where were you during the parade?
Well, we all met at the Coliseum, and they had limousines for us, so they assigned whatever a car you were in. And we left Memorial Coliseum, and you went down towards the train station. You have to picture this. And when you get downtown, you go across... I can't even think of the name of the street.
Broadway?
You are on Broadway, but when you get right downtown, and there's a little curve which goes from left to right, and you look down Broadway, solid. Never forget this picture. All you could see was people. People everywhere, hanging from the lamppost, on ladders, hanging out of windows, banners. They were supposed to go up to City Hall, Funk Plaza.
Yeah.
And it took us forever. And we get up there, and we have had the little ceremony. Walton pours a can of beer on Mayor Goldsmith's head and everything. We announced everybody. It was a madhouse.
Did Walton really ride his bike to Memorial Coliseum? Because you guys were meeting at Memorial Coliseum.
Yeah.
And was that like the day after the game, or how long after?
No, that was the day after the game.
Right after the game. They go, hey, we're going. Because Walton talks about losing his bike that day and how he had to get it back.
And he did. Yeah. Yeah, he had his bike there.
That was a different time. You hung out with the players on the road. Yeah, you went to dinner with them. You got to know them.
It was a smaller group of people. In those days, there were the 12 players, two coaches, a trainer, and me. That was it. Now it's a cast of thousands because of television, and I can understand that. But we were a family, and they invited me in as the broadcaster.
Yeah, I think
that doesn't happen too often.
I think them throwing you in the showers, that was such a endearing moment. You know, it was
yes, it was.
You're part of it.
And I became very dear friends with them. I had the good fortune of, I never had a problem with a player that came through. I saw all the things at times that went on, the so-called jail blazer era, if you will, but and a lot of other things. Not really out of hand, but it happened in life. But for some reason or another, they liked me, buddy.
Bill Shonley, everybody loves you. And I said this to you at the game the other night, because during games, you show up, you look great, you're in your suit and your tie. I mean, you just
look... Well, that was opening night, opening the playoffs, so I wore a tie that
pristine.
Night, John. Pristine.
Okay. And then you, in the course of the game, you're walking around the concourse, you're going to Shonley's place and shaking hands and showing the ring off. I said, you're 89, and I think a big part of people as they age is staying social and staying active. Has this helped keep you sharp and alive? Is being the Shons helped you?
Well, I'm quite sure it has, John. I never really stopped to think about those things. I know what I have to do, what I'm doing now, and I enjoy it. I'm so fortunate to be with the Trailblazers. Like most people know now, 50 years is coming up for that franchise. And I was the sixth guy hired by Harry Glickman, who at the time, he said, now, I want you to go put a radio network together. And Harry's big, deep voice. I said, well, okay. They got a van for me, and I went around the state to try to find some of our network stations. I think I wound up with 15 that first year. There were some that said, we don't want to carry NBA basketball. We're up here in the Pacific Northwest. What do we want to get involved in that? A lot of times I had to get down on bended knee. I made the sale.
Bill Shonley, closed the deal.
Closed the deal, I did, yeah.
That must have been fun, though, because it must have felt like you guys were, you know, you were doing something important.
Yes.
You know, and Harry's vision. When he first meets with you, you were a hockey and baseball broadcaster.
Yeah, that's how Harry Glickman and myself got together. I was doing the Seattle Totems of the old Western Hockey League. I did them for well over 10 years, almost 11 years. And I did some National Hockey League broadcast and telecast for the California Seals while they were in the National Hockey League for a while. And the great rivalry between the Buckaroos here in town and the Totems were terrific. And one of the last things I did up in Seattle were the Seattle Pilots, the American League team of baseball. All of a sudden, here's this young guy who has a major league baseball broadcasting job. And I thought, well, I'm going to be in baseball for the rest of my life. And I enjoyed doing baseball. Well, the city of Seattle could not keep the Pilots because they didn't have a stadium. The American League owners got together under Bud Selig, the former commissioner of baseball, who had an empty stadium in Milwaukee, County Stadium. So he said, hey, here's a team. I'll take them back. Well, lo and behold, they pulled it off. I know the people in Seattle tried, the city fathers and everything. It was sort of a sad deal, and Jimmy Dudley, a sad deal. And Jimmy Dudley and I, who were doing the broadcast, we go into our second spring training, and the last five games of spring training broadcast, you couldn't mention Seattle at all. It was Milwaukee, and that was tough to take. I had a chance to go to Milwaukee with the ball club, and I turned it down because at the time, things were going pretty good for me in Seattle, and I didn't want to leave. I was in the Northwest, and I loved every moment of it. Well, Harry found out that I was available. He called me.
Hey, Sean, Harry Glickman here. How would you like to do NBA basketball?
And I said, oh, Harry, that sounds pretty good.
Well, come on down. I'll get you a place to stay, and we'll talk it over. Okay?
So a couple of days later, when we set the time, our offices were over the other side of town in those days. And I went into his office. We talked about 5-6 minutes. shook hands. That was it. Go put a network together.
Done deal.
That was the beginning.
Bill Shonley with us, legendary Blazers broadcaster, the original voice of the Trailblazers. Over the years, you've had great moments. Championship came real close in the 90s again.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Thought what was, should have had Arvydas Sabonis, if that would have been possible. And they tried. But the big fella wanted to stay in Europe at the time.
Where's the near miss? When you look back in time, where if the Blazers were going to get a second championship, would it have been that next season, 77-78? Would it have been in the 90s? Was, you know, missing in 2000 in the Western Conference Finals? Where was the one that got away?
The year after the championship. About halfway through the year, our five starters were all hurt. Couldn't play. And at one point, you know, we were 50-10.
Yeah.
And it went right down the tubes and played Seattle in the first round. It was a three-game series in those days. And he just could not get the job done. Then it went down after that. You know, Walton was hurt. He couldn't play. Luke had a bad back. It was just one of those things. And you couldn't put him out on the floor. It was over. Then they struggled for some time. And then the late 80s and then 90, 91, and 92, Rick Adelman at the helm, and then Porter, Kersey, and all those people were there, and they came close. Should have three championships. Michael Jordan took part in one of them, and Vinnie Johnson for Detroit Pistons was the other guy that beat them at the time. But they were great, great times.
When players pass, like Boris Lucas and Kevin Duckworth and Jerome Kersey and Dale Schluter come to mind, you're always there. You're in the front of the room with the microphone.
Yeah, they were sad times, and we had the memorials for all of those players. It was a tough job to do because I was very close to all of them. And I think about, for instance, Jerome Kersey and Maurice Lucas – I don't know how many times a week, still.
Now you and Dottie, you're driving around in your red Cadillac with the Rip City plates. Love that. And, you know, this is a good life. Like, you know, 89, you wake up every day, you have something to go do, you've got purpose. This is good. Like, I see Bill Shonley, 100, 105.
Whoa.
You know, people are living long, Shons.
And I can tell I'm slowing down a little bit. I have a tough time, John, saying no, only because I really enjoy doing something for somebody else. Sometimes it doesn't work out, but I will be there. If I say I will do it, I will be there. I've got to start to back myself off for doing some of those things.
Yeah.
And I've had people, and I've turned them down, and they get mad. What do you mean you can't be there? Well, I'm sorry, ma'am, sir. I just get to, well, can't you change your schedule? Well, I have a game. Well, why are they playing that night?
Let's change the schedule.
And I have to be, hold it down. I don't want to slam the phone down.
Do you miss calling a game? Would you like to do more?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. It's...
Come on, you can say it.
It's somebody else's turn.
But even if it wasn't
I enjoy what I'm doing. But yes, I do miss the play-by-play. I'll go to the games, and I'm standing there or sitting there, and in my mind, I'll do my play-by-play. It's just the nature of the beast.
Bingo, bango, bongo.
Bingo, bango, bongo.
What was your favorite Shonley catchphrase?
Course, it starts with Rip City, the story of that, how that began. I guess one of my real favorites, only because it's true in life and in basketball. You've got to make your free throws. And if you do that, for the most part, life goes on fine, and the basketball teams win games. Every time somebody misses a free throw, especially at critical times, I hate to see that. I get upset, but that's me.
Bill Shonley, you're the best. Thank you.
Thank you, John, very much.
Leave it right here. You got the bald-faced truth. Not sure what was going through your mind when you heard Bill Shonley in that last segment. And he just scooted out of here. Not sure what was going through your mind, but I'll tell you what was going through my mind. I'm looking at him and I'm thinking about, I'm watching an 89-year-old man who is very sharp and in good shape, who is, when I was playing the 77 call of that game two of that series, he was nodding and mouthing the words in a way that I could tell, like he could visually still see what he saw in game two of 1977. And people are tweeting at me saying they were misty-eyed. And it's true, because anytime, look, anytime you're talking about somebody who's 89 years old, 90 years old, who's been around the team and is so beloved, I think that every time I see him, I go, this could be the last time I see him. Like, you just don't know when somebody's 89 years old. I treat my parents that way, and they're in their 70s. And I remember my grandfather. Every time I saw him, I hugged him like, hey, this could be the last time, because he was in his 90s. And I think, like, every time I have a conversation with him, there's so many things I want to ask him about his time with the team and in 50 years. This is a franchise that's been here 50 years. He's been here for the whole damn thing. He asked me on the way out. He said, how old are you? And I said, about as long as you were with the team. You know, it's this is a guy who did it all. Peter Sampson, you were on the edge of your seat over there.
Oh, man, that made my week. Unbelievable. As soon as he cracked the mic and just started talking for a second, I was transported back to the mid-80s being a little boy.
Alabama, Adriana, you were down there.
Yeah, I was. It was comical and like awesome for me to watch Peter's reaction, yeah, because I knew how much it meant to him. And I thought you were about to maybe like start crying or something.
I thought he was too.
No,
I thought you got emotional at one point, because I do the same thing. I look at you because you're in the sweet spot for people who would appreciate an interview with Shonley. So I'm trying to ask the questions I know you would be interested in hearing about as well as me.
That was gold. I mean, you did a great job, obviously. And man, thanks for that. Just on behalf of the listener, thank you.
But there's a tricky thing, too, because, you know, I don't want it to be a depressing interview. But at the same time, I'm going, look, this is a guy who's been telling a joke about his ring for many years, in which he says, here's my championship ring. People look at it, and he says, I hope they win another one in my lifetime, but they better hurry up. And he says that, and people laugh. He's now 89. Like, literally, they better hurry up. And he has, and it's true, he's the guy at the front of the service when there's a memorial for Maurice Lucas or Kevin Duckworth or Jerome Kersey. He's the guy who's up at front, and he's delivering the eulogy, or he's the MC of the memorial. And at the end of it, everybody understands, like, the microphone passes to Sean's. I also noticed when I asked him about would he like to call another game, you know, he is very tactful. He does not want to step on the toes of, like, the broadcast teams, Kevin Calabro and Lamar Hurd and Brian Wheeler and Michael Holton. But he would like another game, guys. I'm telling you, I could see it in his eyes. He would love to call another game. If you're the Blazers organization, you got some preseason game. You have a game you want to give him. You want to bring him in for a quarter of a playoff game. I got to be honest with you. You could do worse than bringing him in. And letting him call the third quarter or the second quarter of a playoff game, because I think he could still, while he probably wouldn't want the grind of the day-to-day, I think he could still, in a pinch, be your guy. Sam is in Salem. Sam, what's up?
Hey, John. As I was listening to all that, I got a little misty-eyed myself. In early 1977, we were living in the Newport area, and my dad took me into the Chevy dealership there, and they were having a contest to be a Trailblazer ball boy. And lo and behold, I won the contest. And so my dad took me up to the game, and we walked into the locker room, and I got to meet all the players, and it was really special. This is in March of 1977. And the game was the Indiana Pacers. And I got to meet, like I said, all the players and everybody surrounding the team. But the one person that I'll never forget meeting was Bill Shonley. And this was before the Blazers were a big deal. I mean, they were having a good regular season, but they hadn't won anything yet. And Jack Ramsey was a first-year coach, and there were a lot of new players. But I'll never, ever forget meeting Bill Shonley at that game. And and how nice he was to myself and to my dad that night.
Really cool story, and I think that that is the kind of stuff that Sean Lee hears regularly about when he's working the arena. And I'm being truthful here. All the studies that we that have been done on aging, and they all lead back to one place. Like, of course, you want to be healthy, you want to take care of yourself, and if you take care of yourself in your 30s, 40s, and 50s, your 60s, 70s, and 80s tend to go better. But also, there is a social element to aging. People who have relationships and friends and social circles, they do better. They thrive in the in their 80s and 90s. Ryan's in Vancouver. Go ahead, Ryan.
Hey, John. I tweeted at you asking if he would want to do another game and during the finals or something. But if he could just do, even this year, do like game five in Portland, do like the first quarter or something. I mean, that would just it'd be great. It'd be so awesome because we know we're getting to game five at least.
Yeah, so, yeah. I think that'd be, and I saw it, and I appreciate your tweet. I saw it, and that's why I asked the question. And that's why I go to Twitter, and people like Ryan, you know, I will go there, and I will take your advice. If there's something you want to know, tweet at me, at John Canzano BFT. All right, leave it here. Our big splash is coming up, plus more big guests. We'll find out what Cole Anthony's going to do. And Andrew Greif for the LA Times is going to talk to us about the Clippers and Warriors later in the
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.